My name is Christian Robson. I'm the current editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks. I'm an investigative journalist, worked in mostly the broadcasting environment in my home country, Iceland, until 2010, when I joined WikiLeaks. I had met Julian Assange in Reykjavik when he was preparing interesting projects there, and we befriended. He got me on board, and since then I've been part of the WikiLeaks team.
Can you tell me what was it that you liked about WikiLeaks?
Well, my first experience with WikiLeaks was their great service to my home country in relation to the banking crisis of 2008. I had been working, everybody had to become a business journalist at that time and try to figure out what on earth had happened, why our entire economy, not just the banking sector, had collapsed overnight. And, you know, in the months after the crisis, I was working on trying to figure that out through the old-fashioned person-to-person inquiries and trying to get documents and information. I was actually fired from my job when I was close to exposing who the biggest borrower was in the Icelandic banking system, who happened to be a UK individual named Robert Chingis, who was able to borrow billions of pounds out of the Icelandic banks, which he partly owned through a shell company. And it was all siphoned up to BVI companies with little or no collateral. Anyhow, in 2009, this webpage, which I had no information about, never heard of it before, just put out a report, which was the high exposure loans of the biggest banks in Iceland, with their internal estimate of how precarious those loans were. And it was called the Kaupthing leak. It was an explosive news story in Iceland because it showed the irresponsibility of the biggest bank in Iceland, who had a turnover, you know, of four times the GDP of the country. And there was an attempt made to take that down, that document. The financial supervisory authorities tried to get a court order, but they couldn't find the headquarters of WikiLeaks. They tried to threaten Julian, who just laughed that off. When I did a story based on that document, it was by that time I was had rejoined the state television. It was served with an injunction 5 minutes before broadcast. And in a very illustrative way about what WikiLeaks was and capable of, our lovely anchorman came on the set and read the headlines of the news and then just ad-libbed to the camera and said, these are the news stories that we are allowed to tell you tonight, but just 5 minutes before our broadcast time, we were served with an injunction, the first injunction on the news service in Icelandic broadcasting history of 65 years. A report on documents which were published on the website wikileaks.org. Let me repeat, wikileaks.org. And now to the main news. So, obviously caught my interest, and the entire nation was extremely welcoming this information, and it helped the inquiry that was set up to look into the banking crisis, which led to the imprisonment of a lot of the high-profile bankers. Julian was invited to Iceland and stayed there for months in the winter 2009 and 10. But the idea for a country that goes to this meltdown of this transparency through publishing the raw material, the documents, inspired the population of Iceland. It was part of the recovery process to get the actual information. It inspired lawmakers who in 2010 set out an initiative cross-party without opposition of strengthening media laws, which has work still in progress. He did a tremendously good public service. And for me, as somebody who had been in the mainstream media for more than 20 years, this was and seeing the sort of decline in that environment over the years, getting rather frustrated about the direction of where the mainstream was going. It was such an inspiring new addition to the media environment, and I got was fascinated by the capabilities there, and wanted to know more. And Julian was there, so I sought him out. We became friends, and then he one day we sat down at a cafe on a rainy day in March 2010, and he said, "I got to show you a little video," and flipped over the computer and showed me the Collateral Murder video, and rest is history.
What you're implying there is that maybe this prosecution from the United States under the Espionage Act to do with military leaks, there may be more to the prosecution of Julian than just that.
Well, if you look at what has been published and the reaction to the publications, it's not just the exposure of the military document. It's an expose of much deeper elements. You know, you're instantly flagged as a conspiratorial individual if you talk about the deep state, and if you even talk about conspiracy, you're a conspiracy theorist. I mean, that term has been totally destroyed, even though a conspiracy is a very active thing and is part of the legal language. I mean, anyhow, there are deeper forces there. There were banking documents released prior to that leaks in 2010 and 11. Wrongdoing in the corporate sector as well, Bank of Julius Baer, etc. It is across the board, and it was come as no wonder to us that when the first sort of strong reaction that we got from the U.S. in 2010, as a reaction to the military document expose and the diplomatic cables, was a concentrated reaction by the biggest powerhouses in international banking, putting a banking blockade on WikiLeaks and trying to starve the entire funds. We were receiving ever-growing massive funds through small donations from individuals all around the world. And the big powerhouses, MasterCard and Visa, with Bank of America, with forces in European banking, all teamed together in putting a blockade and trying to starve the oxygen flow to the organization. Which actually put us in a lot of trouble. And we actually resisted, pushed back, and were able through a discovery process, for example, when we were attempting to get Visa and MasterCard investigated on antitrust basis in the European Union, that this was politically instigated. They had to admit that the heads of the U.S. Intelligence Committee in the Senate and in the House, in the Congress, were in contacting these banking institutions and putting pressure on them to react. So it was, we saw that ugly face of that side of power as well.
So more recently, the struggle to keep Julian in the UK, I mean, it's been so horrific for him, particularly because it's almost like an extension of a sentence that hasn't even been passed yet. What stage is that at? Because I know that there's just been a failure to succeed in an appeal. So can you just tell us where we are with all this?
Well, we are very close to a point of no return. It's 11th hour, so to speak. The High Court just weeks ago, decided, one judge in the High Court, that to deny Julian appeal to the High Court. He has only one avenue left, that is to repeat that process and request another hearing on the request to appeal. And then it will go to two high court judges in an oral hearing. We have no idea when that's going to happen. If that is denied, he is extradited. That is the end of the road in the UK. If high court judges, those three, one has already done it and the other two will deny him an appeal, it cannot be brought to the Supreme Court. That's the end of the road. And there's already a signed a document from the Home Office to extradite him and throw him on a rendition plane to the US.
So the process, legal process, does seem to be very, very flawed. I'm wondering if, in a nutshell, you can explain why he is even being prosecuted under the Espionage Act, where certainly on the face of it, it looks as if it was the newspapers themselves that released this information, not Julian and not WikiLeaks. That WikiLeaks and Julian took great pains not to release this sensitive information.
Yeah, I mean, the so-called judicial process here in the UK has only revealed one thing, that the entire system is rotten to the core, and it's a systemic corruption. And it's become extremely revealing for me, from as an outsider, to sit in all the court proceedings and see this happening in front of your eyes. It's just an eye-opening experience to see the length of stretching the law by circumventing the law in an attempt to service the Americans in this extradition process. It is such an obvious politicized process, and he is a political prisoner, and everybody sees that now, that he's a political prisoner here in the United Kingdom. The indictment in the United States, which was brought about under Trump, was the first time a journalist and a publisher is hit with an indictment based on the Espionage Act. There is 17 of those. The 18th count is a ridiculous one, where he is charged with breaching a Computer Intrusion Act. They call it the hacking charge, even there is not even the description of any hacking in the indictment, but that's propaganda by the Department of Justice. These could land him in a prison for 175 years in the United States. This is a foregone conclusion if he's extradited, because this will go before a court in the Eastern District of Virginia, where the jury pool is almost entirely picked from people with vested interest in all the government institutions that are within a circle of, 40, 50 miles, including the CIA, State Department, and what have you. One statistic, which is very informative about so-called justice in that court, that it's rather unfavorable against the defendant, the conviction rate, because in espionage cases in that court, it is 100% conviction rate, which should tell you a little bit of story of what kind of justice is to be had there. And that's why the authorities there, the Department of Justice, brings espionage cases to this particular court. It's called the spy court. It's where you formally just finish the case. But he will be thrown into detention upon arrival to the U.S., and they can drag on the pre-trial period up to 3 years. And we know for a fact that he would be held in solitary confinement, and I'm afraid that he would not survive that. And that is the medical assessment that has not been contradicted in courts here in the United Kingdom. That he is in grave danger, and his life is in danger if he is extradited into those conditions.
Well, it's interesting that we've got a general election coming up soon here in the UK. The leader of the opposition, it looks likely to become the next Prime Minister, is Keir Starmer. He had a role, didn't he, as a prosecutor, the DPP here in the UK, before he became an MP. And it does look as if it's been revealed recently that there's quite a close relationship between this potential new Prime Minister in Britain and the Department for Justice in the United States and the State Department. This has only just recently come out.
Well, there have been writings and investigations of journalists writing on this subject that whilst Keir Starmer was DPP and head of the Crown Prosecution Service, he curated and established a really close connection to the Department of Justice in the United States and the State Department, and a much closer than the DPP had ever had before. And of course, Sir Keir was head of the Crown Prosecution Service when the CPS was actively, as you know, from information that were obtained through Freedom of Information Act requests, delaying the process of the Swedish case, keeping that in limbo, keeping that in from forwarding, directing strongly the Swedes not to progress the case, to keep Julian locked up in the embassy for as long as possible. That all came from an official in the CPS. We have now through evidence of it in emails, so even though they are redacted somewhat, we can easily read that. And the journalist who obtained these documents, Stefania Maritzi, an investigative journalist, also got data from the Swedish side. So if you pull that together, you can see exactly what the scenario was all about. The Swedish wanted to close the case as early as 2012-13 and said so in emails. But then the Crown Prosecution Service, which was supposedly just to have a role to as servicing the Swedes, were writing back and say, don't you dare to get cold feet on us.
No, I'm sure Starmer would say, were he here, he said, this is nothing to do with me. I was director of the service, but I wasn't managing this case.
Oh, it is well known, and I mean, there have been reports on that in that scenario, in that time, Keir Starmer wanted all high-profile cases to pass by his desk. That is, you can read that in the book The Starmer Project by the journalist Oliver Eagleton, where he's based his findings on interviewing former colleagues of Keir Starmer at the Crown Prosecution Service. And it is hard to think that he would not know such a high-profile case, how it was being directed and indeed manipulated. And now there's an ongoing inquest now. It hasn't been in the news that an information tribunal here has ordered an inquest into the fact that thousands of emails pertaining to Julian Assange have been destroyed at the Crown Prosecution Service, totally against all regulations. And actually, it should be a criminality, because these documents and the communications were destroyed while the case was still open. Who can destroy documents on a pending case? What on earth was in these documents?
Well, it sounds to me like perversion of the course of justice, which can lead to up to life imprisonment potentially, because these are the sorts of documents which Julian's lawyers may be requesting or even forcing through the courts to be disclosed in court.
Absolutely. And this is just one of the dozens of angles how abusive the entire process has been when it comes to Julian. It's on all fronts, on all levels. Wherever you dive into the case, you see abuse on that. And no wonder that Nils Melzer, the former special rapporteur on torture at the United Nations, who investigated the case of Julian Assange and wrote a book about it, he came to the conclusion there was no parallel. You cannot find no other example in the Western world where four countries on all level have teamed up in such a mobbing effort towards one individual. And that's Ecuador, Sweden, United Kingdom and the United States on all level, and of course including with participation in the media in this smear campaign against Julian Assange.
Well, this makes all those four countries, particularly the British, look very, very bad internationally, and it gives all of Britain's contestants around the world a very easy get-out when it comes to human rights. They will say, well, what about human rights were you? And what about Julian Assange? So what's the point of it all?
The point of it all in silencing Julian is sending a clear example and making a sample out of him to have the cooling effect that you don't mess with our secrets. We will not allow it. This is the limit. You've overstepped, and it has already had a chilling effect. It's obvious. We have seen the example throughout the years, in the 13 years that we've been fighting for the freedom of Julian. This has empowered other nations in their attack on journalism. You had even raids in his home country in Australia, where they raided the public broadcaster, the ABC, and took out computers in attempt to try to locate a source for a story. You had all these events going on all over the place. Even Bolsonaro got the idea to try to go after Glenn Greenwald based on the indictment against Julian. And on another level, you have given the excuse of other leaders to crack down on journalists. I mean, even Gershkovitz is one who is now being imprisoned in Moscow in Levenfurto prison, accused of espionage. The first one Western journalist to be imprisoned after the end of the Cold War. And on top of that, you have the damage on that front is already clear, and the cooling effect in our part of the world, if you may say so, is already obvious as well.
There seems to have been a change in character in the Guardian Observer newspaper. The foreign reporting, for example, in this newspaper seems to be very much more pro the Anglo-American Empire establishment than it was before the days when they were publishing leaks from Julian himself.
Yeah, I mean, that's an all. We could have a long discussion about my observation of the British media, and it's not going to be a very, very generous remarks that I will make about the process there. And I'm afraid, especially when it comes to The Guardian, they have. I have no praise for their reporting in the chains. But this is a part of a larger picture, and a troubling picture indeed. And the New York Times, for example, has been awful when it comes to processing information, and it's not the New York Times that that took on the establishment, for example, in the early 70s when it came to the Pentagon Papers. It's not the Washington Post of that era. The entire mainstream media environment has totally changed and shifted, and not in the right direction, and the opposite.
So, Lou, isn't there some hope for Julian if he does get extradited to the United States? Because if you look at, for example, the Espionage Act prosecution of Chelsea Manning, when it actually came to it, the sentence was much less than had been originally threatened. And also, he's now done deals and he's out of prison.
Well, he didn't do any deals. He was... Her sentence was commuted by Obama when he was on his way out of the White House, probably because of bad conscience and probably of legacy concerns, because he campaigned on a promise to create avenues and safeguard the very positive practice of whistleblowing. And you have all these campaign videos before the 2008 election when he was praising whistleblowers for the good work, and they were, a whistleblower was absolutely very important in the democratic process. But lo and behold, under his presidency, he imprisoned more whistleblowers than all presidents under the Espionage Act, than all presidents combined since the act was put in place in 1917. So I think it was bad conscience that led to him commuting Chelsea Manning's sentence. But she did spend 7 years in prison, and she was imprisoned again when they were trying to pressure her into witnessing against Julian Assange. But she did get 35 years imprisonment. in the military court. There is, I don't think even Julian Assange would get that kind of sentence. It would probably be more, because the forces that are against him are so ferocious, and it's not even a given thing that the Biden administration, the political top layer, has the power to actually intervene at the moment.
I think it's fair to say that there are forces around the world very pro-Julian too, though. And also, of course, the whole concept of WikiLeaks is a very powerful one still.
It is a power, it's a powerful idea, and it still it lives on. And but it's the legacy of it is being attacked, and it is an ongoing one, but that will not be successful. The support for Julian is tremendously growing. It's big and it's growing. And I've met five presidents in Latin America, including the Obrador president of Mexico and Lula da Silva in Brazil. And all the countries south of the United States borders, all the most important states there, now have basically an official policy supporting Julian. And in Brazil, it's part of the foreign policy of the country to fight for Julian. People see the implication that if this goes ahead. You know, I addressed the Human Rights Commission and the Senate in Brazil. They passed a resolution. So on all levels in Latin America, it's full support. And now the Pope did see Stella Assange, and in that way sent a clear signal of support without him saying anything, but the sheer fact that he would invite her to come with their two sons to the Vatican is quite obviously a signal of understanding that this is absolutely a gross violation on all front.
So is WikiLeaks still able to do what it used to do? Say someone comes to you with a flash drive with some sensitive information?
We are operational, but we have been focusing all our effort to the most important project in our mind, that is to save Julian and thereby save our own skin, so to speak, and the idea of journalism, because this is Julian Assange's case is the most precarious threat, an existential threat to investigative journalism in the world today.
Okay, could you just tell us whereabouts to find, where if listeners want to contribute to the campaign, what's the best way to do it?
Look up Don't Extradite Assange campaign webpage. A lot of information is there and ideas to how to support. And the Twitter feeds of the Don't Extradite Assange campaign and the WikiLeaks Twitter. It's easy to find information on the subject, and I urge people to actually get familiar with it, because there's themselves without intermediaries, because we have had unfavorable media. But when you get on down that path, it will be a huge revelation, not just about Julian Assange, but about the sort of the increased darkness that is descending upon us in this part of the world, and in the world in at large. You can call it power of fascism or whatever, but it's power of darkness that is descending upon us. And Julian's case is very much a symptomatic of what that is bringing to us.
Obviously, the fight needs money, it needs resources. You talked about how the banking establishment turned on WikiLeaks. Is it still possible to donate?
It is. And actually, it was one of the success in courts that we had. We took a Visa affiliate to court, and we were able to crush the banking blockade, which was a great success, and we actually could claim compensation for the wrongdoing. There was success when in other court cases where there was an attempt to take down information in California, for example. There was success in one of the most unreported stories in judicial history of the United States, even though it should have been high profile. The Democratic National Committee tried to take Julian Assange to court. And in a very humiliating way, a federal court judge in Manhattan dismissed the case with prejudice. Anybody who reads that document, and I hope more Americans would actually do that, should be surprised that you could find a voice of that nature. The judge said, and this was about revelation in the 2016 trial prior to the election there, the DNC leaks and the Podesta leaks, that Julian Assange did was clearly a journalistic practice protected by the U.S. First Amendment, and it was not a crime to reveal the wrongdoing of a political party or a questionable political party prior to the election. It was in the public interest, and case dismissed. Of course, it was none of the legacy media in the United States report on it. You could never find a single report on that remarkable judgment.
Kristen Hrafnsson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.